Welcome to the True North Community Church Podcast.
Wonder and beauty. This is week two of a two-week series called Wonder and Beauty. And if you weren't with us last week, I hope you will check it out online because we have a new little section of our website called truenorthchurch.net/video archive where you can actually watch last week's service. And last week's service would be a really good one to watch because last week was basically a department, a memo from the Department of Massive Wonders. And we looked at a bunch of photographs of cosmic marvels and incredibly weird creatures and stunning landscapes and all kinds of beautiful things and just sat in stunned wonder of God. And it was a pretty great week that we spent together. So you can check that out at truenorthchurch.net/video archive. Now, before I even tell you what today's message is about, I must tell you the true story of the flying man. So somebody came up to me after last week's service and they were like, "Oh, Jen, like, how do you stay so positive all the time?" And I was like, "Oh, my friend, I don't. I have plenty of dark seasons of my own, lots of, you know, times when I go through discouraged weeks or whatever." And as it happened, there was a time earlier this year when I was just having a couple of rough weeks. Like, I was troubled about some stuff. And I was doing some of that, what we talked about last week, morbid ruminating, where you're just thinking and thinking and circling on something and troubled about it, and it's just kind of, you're stuck in your own head and all this. So finally I was like, enough of this. I decided to take my own advice and just try to break out of it and go take a walk on the beach. So I live on the North Shore, and as you guys probably know, the North Shore beaches are very rocky, and some of them have these beautiful cliffs that just sweep up like that. So I was taking a walk on the beach, and as I did, a wave came in, and I saw this really pretty stone in the wave. So I bent down to pick it up and take a look at it, and while I was looking at this thing, I wasn't really paying attention to what was around me. And then suddenly I glanced up, and there was a man falling out of the sky. Like a man with a purple and yellow parachute landing on the beach 20 or 30 feet away from me. So I did what any of you guys would have done, is I walked up to this guy and I said, "Where did you come from?" And he said, he pointed to this distant cliff and he said, "Oh, I came from right over there." And I was like, "Yeah, but who are you?" And he was like, "Eric." So I said, "But what are you doing, Eric?" And he's like, "Oh, well, I'm paragliding. So when a really strong wind comes across the Long Island Sound from Connecticut, it hits these cliffs and makes a big wall of air. And if I'm there with my parachute, I can jump off and catch that wall of air. And just like a bird, I can glide for miles along the coastline. And then I turn around and I glide all the way back. And then eventually I come back and I land here on this beach again." And I was like, "Are you serious? Why do you do this?" And he said, "I always wanted to fly. And, to take up airplane flying was sort of prohibitively expensive, so he just happened to hear about paragliding, and he took it up, and now this is what he does." And I just thought it was so wonderful. I mean, look at the picture that we had up there. Like, did you see the joy on his face? Paragliding is probably a sport, but when Eric is flying, he just becomes a living work of art. And although he didn't mean to, he kind of did me a good deed that day, because there I had been all caught in my thoughts and caught up in myself, and then I look and there's a flying man. And it caused me wonder. It comforted me. It inspired me a little bit. It's not that all my problems evaporated. It didn't fix anything for me, but you can see that it was helpful. The reason I tell you this story is because last week we talked about how when in our suffering, God can come and break through that and give us his presence and speak to us in wonder. So we looked at the natural wonders of the world. This week I want to talk about how do we do that for other people? How do we, in the wonder and beauty of our humanity, reach other people in their suffering? So that's where we're going today. Now, Eric, of course, was not intending. I don't think he knew I was going to be on that beach. It was a marvelous thing that we happened to be there together. You could be doing this already for somebody around you just by doing what you love, by doing that thing that makes you come alive. You might, without even knowing it, be inspiring somebody else. If you're the kind of person who makes people laugh, you're doing that already. We're so glad you're here on the planet. You know, you lighten the mood, you help us. But I would like to talk today about how we can go a step further and be a little more intentional about that. And that is something that any one of us can do. So here's where we're going to start. I would like you to start by thinking of somebody that you know who's going through a rough time right now. It could be a person, a couple, a family, the kind of thing, the kind of situation that when you think of it, you just become discouraged at the depth of what they're going through. You know, like a real marriage on the rocks, like the kids are involved, it's getting messy, it really makes you like, oh. Or I heard this week about a young mother who has terminal cancer and she's got two very small children and she's facing the end of her life and, you know, feeling understandably very angry and upset about this. That kind of a thing where you're like, there's no way I could fix this. You know, you might even be thinking of a community. Maybe you've served abroad or you've done a missions trip or volunteering, and there's a community in this country or in this world that you connected with those people and you love them and you know that they are still struggling with the same kind of stuff they were before, like poverty, lack of clean water, lack of education, whatever that might be. So I want to take a moment and just, I'm going to give you 10 seconds actually, to let this person or couple or family or community just kind of rise up in your mind. Okay. So now we're all probably thinking, you know, somebody who's going through this rough time, and this is somebody that we care about. And this is the kind of situation that when you look at this, you're like, I could not begin to fix this. This is the kind of thing that humbles us, because we look at it, we're like, to fix this situation would take the entire crew of Extreme Home Makeover. You would need like an architect and a building crew and a $100,000 budget. And what do I have? And you start to look at your resources and you're like, I don't know, what's the most useless thing you guys can think of? A lava lamp. Like, I got a lava lamp and a bacon-flavored Oreos and a ShamWow. I got a ShamWow. So you're like looking at this stuff and you're like, this is not equal to this task. And this kind of thing can get very discouraging for us. And often, as human beings, when we're faced with this kind of situation, what do? Well, many of us start by praying, which is great. That is a fantastic place to begin. Because God can see possibilities in this situation that we can't see. We talked last week about creatures we didn't know existed. We talked about how there are colors that we can't perceive with our human eyes. There are dimensions to reality that can't be expressed except with advanced mathematics. There are things in this world that we don't have the instrumentation to be aware of. So if that's the case, it stands to reason that in this situation, there may be possibilities that we can't see. So prayer is always a great place to start, because God is in everything. And through prayer, he lets us cooperate in creating life here. But we don't just want to leave it there. Because if we just pray all our lives and we don't ever put our faith into action, I mean, say, for example, clean water is something that you are concerned about, and it really bothers you that in Africa right now there are women who have to walk miles a day to get several gallons of contaminated water to bring back to their families and their children get sick, and that really, you know, your heart, that hurts you. So if all we do is pray all our lives for clean water, and we pray for clean water, and we never give $20 to charity water to help them build some water, I think God is justified in rolling his eyes at us, because he gave us hands and feet and bodies and the ability to do something. But what can we do when this seems so big? Some of us respond by just ignoring it, by just shutting down, like, there's nothing I can do, I'm going to put this out of my mind because it's too hard to think about this. Some of us go to the other extreme with worry, and we start worrying and worrying and worrying because we can't get it off our minds, and worry feels like we're doing something, but it's not really getting anything done, it's just making us feel worse. The bold among us sometimes go over to this situation and start giving advice, which is not always the best idea. Like, because other people's problems are always so clear to us, right? It's always so clear what that person should do. But unless this person has asked for advice, I mean, if they have asked, great, share your wisdom, share your expertise and experience. But sometimes when you are hurting this bad and somebody comes and gives you advice, it's just salt in the wound. It just makes you feel worse and more lonely. Now, the really bold among us sometimes take an additional step and get in there and try to fix it for them. So it's like, okay, I'm going to talk to him, and I'm going to talk to her, and I'm going to tell everybody what they got to do, and I'm going to take care of this. And it's like, I don't know if you've ever been on the receiving end of that, but that's no fun either. Sometimes that can make it worse. So if we're not going to ignore it or worry about it or give advice or try to fix it, what can we do? I would like to offer you guys an alternative tonight, which I call the tiny beautiful thing. And we'll talk later about what the tiny beautiful thing is. But I want to start by saying that you are all qualified to do it. Because the only two qualifications to do the tiny beautiful thing are you a human being, and do you have a heartbeat? So we're all here, we're good so far, right? No dead bodies in the room? Okay, we can proceed. The reason for this is the first five words of the Bible. Do you guys know what the first five words of the Bible are? Okay, here's some murmurs. Okay, I hear an in the beginning. That's good. That's true. That's the first three words, in the beginning. And the next one is God. Yes, because God is the main character of the Bible. And the fifth word is in the beginning, God created. You guys know the first five words of the Bible. I didn't know if people would. Yes, in the beginning, God created. The first thing that God tells us about himself is that he's a creator. He's creative. God created light, and he created landscapes, and he created creatures and constellations and peacock mantis shrimp. He's the author of all that is wondrous and flourishing and growing. So this is the first thing that he shows us about himself. Now, we're not going to, some of you are like, okay, but did he do it by evolution or literal six-day creation or intelligent design? We're not getting into that tonight, okay? We're not going to get into the nitty-gritty of, like, how did he do it? The big idea that we're pointing to is God as a creator. God is the creative being from whom all life unfurled. Now, when human beings show up in this creative process, Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, this is what it says. So God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female. He created them. He created us. And he created us to be like him. We are not him, but we're like him. So we are creative like him. We can't help but create. You guys all do this, no matter what Mrs. So-and-so said in fifth grade when she said you're not creative. And the rest of your life you've been telling people, no, I'm not really creative. You are. You are. You can't help it. And I want to congratulate you, some of you guys, because some of you guys in this room create things that all of society agrees are very useful. Like you create food, or you create buildings, or you create healthcare, you create education, you create care for our children, or you create spreadsheets that keep our money in order, or you create systems or computer programs, and all of us are like, yes, thank you for creating what you do, because it keeps all of us alive and keeps things going. See, what you create is quite useful. Now, there's also another subset of human creators who, for no discernible reason, create things that are not obviously useful. I am in that team. We on this team would not be picked. If there were a zombie apocalypse, we wouldn't be picked for the survival squad. The things that we create do not seem useful on the surface, and we are called artists. We create, for some reason, ever since we've been little, we feel compelled to make stories and sculptures and dances and songs and poems and little plays and weird things that don't have any purpose on this earth. And when we're a kid, that's great. We don't care. We just create for the joy of it. You know, we scribble and have a wonderful time. But then the older we get, people start saying, well, what are you going to do for a living? And how are you going to pay the bills? And what's your point in society? So, you know, a lot of us say, oh, yes, okay. And we try to make it, or, you know, we get a day job and we're responsible, but and yet we can't stop creating things. And we're making them, and yet the whole time we're wondering, like, what's the purpose of all this? And why am I doing this? And why doesn't the ramen factory make more flavors of noodles? Just kidding, parents whose kids are going off to college and studying art, it's okay. I studied writing and literature, and I totally am employable, and I haven't eaten ramen in years. So everything's going to be okay. So, but the question is serious, because if you're doing something for the love of it, and you're not getting any worldly success out of it, and so far you can't tell how the people around you are benefiting, you do start to ask the question, why? So I want to show you a picture of my desk, my writing desk at home. I bought this desk when I was 23 years old. I went to IKEA, and I bought an inexpensive desk, and I brought it home and assembled it with that little Allen key, and I painted it green, and I put it in a corner of my apartment. And the reason that I did that at age 23 is because I had decided it was time to get serious about my writing. I'm a fiction writer, so I went to college, I read a million wonderful books, and I studied how writing works, and then I went off into the world and I got a job, And soon after that, I realized it was time to get serious about my writing, that God had given me this gift, and I needed to put the time and the discipline in to hone it. Because just like prayer or Bible study, at some point, you got to put your faith into action. So I was feeling this call and this restlessness to do something with my writing, and I wanted to write a novel. So I made a commitment to myself to go to that desk every day and sit down and write, whether I felt like it or not, whether I felt inspired or not. I would sit down and I would pray, God, please create through me. I want to make a beautiful thing that will do some good in this world. So let me be just a pen in your hand and your instrument, and let's write together today. And I worked and I honed my craft. And the amazing thing was, this is gonna sound so weird and like mystical, but I felt the presence of God as I was working. It was almost like God was keeping me company. And that remains true to this day, that when I write, I feel close to God in a way I don't at other times, and I feel like I come alive and I'm doing what I'm meant to do. And the work that I was making was like, it was pretty good. It was not bad. So things were going well, and I'm like, wow, this is really amazing. And yet, every time I sat down, there was this little annoying voice in the back of my head that was still saying, what good is this? You're wasting your time. This isn't gonna come to anything. This is useless. And the worst would be when I would think about the fact that at that very moment, there was a child on this earth who was drawing their last breath because of malnutrition or because of some preventable disease. And what was I doing? I was sitting at this desk writing stories. Now, for a long time, I thought this little voice was God, but I don't think that voice is God. And I think that that was a convincing lie. And like any convincing lie, it had a shred of truth in it, which is that writing stories doesn't put food on anybody's table. But that doesn't mean that it's useless. This is a bowl that my mother made. My mom is a potter, and she did pottery when she was young. And then when, you know, she stopped doing it as she got older. She had kids, she was working, she was going to school. But then when she, when we had moved out, she got herself a potter's wheel and a kiln, and she started doing pottery again. And she did that constant practice, and pretty soon she was making these absolutely beautiful pieces of pottery. So she made this, and I saw it, and I asked her if I could have it, because I just loved it so much, and she said yes. So I took it here to True North, to my desk in my cubicle back there. And on the days when I'm really stressed out or my to-do list is long or I've got a whole bunch of emails I haven't answered yet, I look at this thing and I just feel peace. I feel peaceful inside when I look at this. I don't know why. It's sort of mysterious, but looking at this bowl makes me feel peace. And I think that's something that good art can do. Like, good art can comfort us. It can bring us peace. Sometimes good art can do the opposite. It can make us usefully uncomfortable. I'm getting to know a really cool lady in our church right now who produced a documentary. And man, documentary filmmaking can absolutely do that. You know, the filmmaker goes out to some part of the world that and sees some injustice that's happening and records it and crafts it into this powerful narrative that gets the rest of us activated and ready to do something about it. It wakes us up and makes us usefully uncomfortable so that we can do the work of changing that in the world. So that's another thing good art can do. Good art can also make us feel less alone. Do you guys remember that song that you loved in high school? How back in high school you were this churning, you know, mass, and maybe this is where you are right now and you're thinking of a song quite recently, but you feel like you're this churning mass inside of like emotions and longings and hormones and all this stuff, and it just feels like there's nobody who understands you. And then you hear this song on the radio, and you're like, that's it. They said it. That's what I'm feeling. It's all the stuff you couldn't express. And you're like, I'm not alone in this world. So you get obsessed with that song, and you go get the album, and then you get all into the artist. And that's what this is about. Like, there's art. There's somebody else. That art is making you feel less alone. So these are just a couple of about, you know, dozens or hundreds of things that good art can do. And what that does, I think, is because the God is not just about feeding and housing and healing our bodies. God is about feeding and healing and housing our emotions and our souls and our hearts, and that's what good art does. It points to that life to the full. You remember last week we talked about John chapter 10, verse 10? Jesus said, I came that they may have life and have it to the full. That's what it does. So good art points to that life. It kind of points to God as the creator of pleasure and of flavor, and it carries the fragrance of God. And it doesn't, by the way, sometimes Christians think that they can only consume like explicitly Christian art. So it's got to have a cross all over it, or like has to say Jesus on every page, or like ends with a big moral, or, you know, Christian artists think that that's the only kind of art they can make. Not so. Have you, when I say something carries the fragrance of God, have you guys ever had a shirt or a jacket that belonged to somebody that you really love, like a spouse or a girlfriend or boyfriend? And when you bring that garment to your face, and you take in a deep breath, you can smell, it just evokes the presence of that person. You smell their perfume, you smell their cologne, or that their cigarette smoke, or like that thing, that's something about their body. And it just brings their whole presence to you in a way more powerful than if they had written their name all over that jacket. So that's what good art can do. It carries the fragrance of God to us. That is also what a tiny, beautiful thing can do. Any beautiful thing that you do as a human being can carry the fragrance of God. So this would be a good time to tell you about the tiny, beautiful thing, which I still haven't told you about yet. So we've got this situation. We've got this big, hairy mess of a situation. And then we've got our tiny, little, meager resources over here. So it's, you know, divorce versus lava lamp. Cancer versus Oreos. Clean water crisis versus ShamWow. And we're looking at this ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's discouraging and it's ridiculous. And yet, there's a story in the Bible, in the Gospels, that almost immediately parallels this ridiculous situation. And I'm going to call this story the killing machine versus the perfume. So let's look at Mark chapter 14, starting at verse 1. Now the Passover and the festival of unleavened bread were only 2 days away. And the chief priests and the teachers of the law were scheming to arrest Jesus secretly and kill him. So right now we're in the week leading up to the crucifixion in this story, to Jesus' crucifixion. The religious authorities are conspiring against him. And Jesus is aware of this. This must be weighing on him quite heavily. He's facing his own death. They're out to get him. And yet, because he's Jesus, he keeps doing the thing that he does, which is eating with people, especially people on the margins, like having meals in people's homes. And that's where we find him in this story. He's at the table of a man named Simon the leper. So let's look at verse 3. While he was in Bethany, reclining at the table in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume made of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. Now, in our culture, when you break a bottle on somebody's head, that's an act of aggression. But this woman is not starting a bar fight with Jesus. Like, what she's doing is, this woman sees who he is. She recognizes God's presence in him. She sees the power and the love and the light in him, and she loves him. So what she does is take the most precious thing that she has and break it for him as a way of honoring him, and saying, like, I love you, I honor you, I see who you are. And it's a gesture of devotion. But this beautiful gesture of devotion causes a backlash. So let's see what happens next. Verse 4. Some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, why this waste of perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages and the money given to the poor. And they rebuked her harshly. Now, this seems pretty harsh, but on the other hand, they kind of have a point. This sort of makes sense. If you've got something that's worth a year's wages, that can feed a lot of people. And besides that, if these are friends of Jesus, they know that Jesus is passionately concerned for the poor. He is often teaching about how we need to share with those among us who have less. You know, he has very stern words for those who hoard their wealth. So they sort of have a point. So what's going to happen now? We've got the woman with the broken jar, and we've got all these guys saying, like, okay, what gives? And then we've got Jesus. What is Jesus going to say? What's the verdict? Verse 6. Leave her alone, said Jesus. Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, and you can help them anytime you want, but you will not always have me. She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. Truly, I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. Leave her alone. She did a beautiful thing. She did what she could. Let's look at this from the woman's point of view for a minute. We don't know how loud the whispers were of the conspiracy against Jesus. We don't know. Did she know what was coming? He did, but did she? We don't know. But let's imagine for a minute that she did. Let's say that she's in your position, and the same way you know of this crisis or this thing that's going on. Let's say that she knows that Jesus is facing his death. What can she do about it? Because on the other side, the religious authorities have access to the entire Roman killing machine. They got the Roman justice system and the Roman soldiers and the cross and the nails and all of that. And what does she have? Chanel number 5. Like, what, in a fight of perfume versus killing machine, who wins? You don't even get into that fight. It's a lost cause. You don't. But the good news is, that's not her job. Her job is not to fix this. In one of the other Gospels, Jesus explains to his disciples the suffering that he's going to have to go through, what's ahead of him. And Peter says, no, don't. He doesn't want to hear this, that Jesus is going to go through this. And Jesus insists, no, this is part of what I'm here for. I must go through this. So even the people around him are kind of denying this and not wanting to think about it. This is one of the only instances that I know of somebody stopping and blessing Jesus for what he's about to go through. And maybe this is why it affects him so profoundly. He acknowledges it. He says, she poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. He's got something horribly difficult ahead of him, something terribly scary that he's got to face. And finally, someone around him did a beautiful thing and acknowledged it and sort of blessed him and said, yes, you're going and I'm doing this beautiful thing. No wonder it affected him so profoundly, because the job of the tiny beautiful thing is not to fix. The job of the tiny beautiful thing is to encourage and strengthen and bless and give hope to another person so they can play their part in God's amazing story, which sometimes includes walking through a season of intense suffering. Sometimes that ends in death. Sometimes that ends in new life. Sometimes it's death and then new life. But whatever happens, that's not our job. We're not in the planning department. We're not in the department of massive wonders. You and I are in the department of tiny, beautiful things. She did a beautiful thing to him. Now, what does this look like in your life and in mine? A humble example of this happening recently is a little more lighthearted, like if we don't want to go this heavy all evening. You guys may be aware that our students in Journey, which is our high school ministry, recently went on a missions trip, and they traveled to rural Pennsylvania, and they were fixing up houses for people in need. So they went, and some of us in the church signed up to make each of those students a care package. So you guys like took shoe boxes and you packed up snacks and candy and, you know, glow sticks and notes and, I don't know, all kinds of fun little things for them. Now, do high school students, in order to fix houses, do they need jelly beans and glow sticks? Are they building gingerbread houses? No, they don't need that stuff. But it was a tremendous encouragement to them. When I talked to them and the leaders, they said this meant a lot to those kids. Some of those students were probably going away from their parents for a week for the first time. They were going to selflessly serve. They're giving up a week of their summer to help other people. And that little act of encouragement that you did meant the world to them. They felt so loved. They felt so cared for. This is what a beautiful thing does. It carries the fragrance of God to somebody else to give them the courage to do what they need to do. So what is this going to look like for you this week? What tiny, beautiful thing can you do for that person that you were thinking of? The simplest thing, which is why you're qualified to do this as long as you have a heartbeat, is to just be with them. Just be present with them. Listen to them without trying to explain or give advice or blame them or anything. Just listen and be there. Bring over a pizza and watch some baseball. Just be a warm presence there, another human being. That can be a huge help. You could also write an encouraging note to them. You could get them a think about what kind of gift that they might like. What would really encourage them? Is it a money thing? Maybe giving them a little bit of money, just give them some hope and encourage them and help them take the next step. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to be praying that you guys draw on that God-given creativity this week to think of what tiny, beautiful thing would mean something to the people in that situation. Now, if you're an artist, if you're somebody who makes things, I want to give you guys a special permission slip that your tiny beautiful thing this week can be to go to your desk or your art supplies or your guitar or whatever it's been and make some art, especially if it's been a while. Because everybody else in the room is going to be doing a tiny beautiful thing for somebody that they know already. You are doing a tiny beautiful thing for somebody that you have not ever met. What you are doing is beginning or continuing the process of taking that God-given gift and honing it and becoming the best craftsperson you can be so you can make a piece of art that one day is going to move somebody else the way that song moved you in high school or the way this bowl gives me peace or that documentary has helped changing the world. So you, that full permission for you to be that, that's your tiny beautiful thing this week. For all of us, artist or not, any kind of human creator, everybody in the room, when you go to do that thing this week, there may be a tiny voice in the back of your head saying, this is useless. This doesn't really do anything. This is stupid. This is a dumb idea. What I'm making is stupid. Everything's stupid. Like that, I hate that voice. When you hear that voice, this is what I want you to do. Picture God standing behind you with the same authority and protective love as when Jesus stood and spoke over that woman and said, leave her alone. Leave her alone. Leave him alone. This is my child doing something beautiful for me, doing what they can. So with that, my friends, go forth this week and do your tiny beautiful thing. And may God bless you. Let's pray. God, thank you for existing. Thank you for being so good to us, for being a God of wonder and all the things that you are. Thank you for every person in this room that you've created in your image and the gifts and abilities that you've given them. And thank you specifically for their love for that person that they were thinking about. For those that we have held in our minds tonight, I pray especially for them. You know where they are, and I pray you would pour out your grace and love and help on them in an extraordinary way this week and help them get through that suffering with dignity and love and bravery. And I pray that you would inspire each of these people tonight with an idea for a tiny beautiful thing that would carry the potent fragrance of you to that person. Because a jar of perfume is small, but it is potent. And when we break it, the fragrance fills the house. And that is what we are asking for tonight. Please bless these, your children, and give them peace. In Jesus' name, amen.